And Irene, Commissioner Rubio's office wanted a copy of the recording. Commissioner Rubio will try to attend, but there's a scheduling conflict. So she asked if at the end, maybe you could send a copy. Let me see.
I can download it to Trim and send her the link right after the meeting.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is there someone in her office specifically?
Yeah. Misan asked if you could send it directly to Commissioner Rubio with a CC to her.
Okay.
I believe you're familiar with Misan Pierce,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a brave new world with these Zooms. I just got off of one Zoom for the last 5.5 hours. That's work related, and now another Zoom. It's very different. At least like a normal work schedules, you'd have a little bit of a break. You'd walk from place to place, but now it's just one after the other. Sam, you know what I'm talking about. when you messaged me, I saw briefly your schedule there for the next couple of days, and it's back to back, as I'm sure a lot of people's are, but it's something else. You're definitely more productive. Okay. Oh, and Stephanie, welcome. We have with us today a new member of the mayor's staff, Stephanie Lorenko. She's the new public safety senior advisor for Mayor Wheeler. And I believe you just started yesterday. Is that correct, Stephanie? So
I did. Yeah, thank you.
Jumping in the waters right away. That's great. Okay, let's begin. If we have additional people joining us, I'm sure they'll be able to catch up as we are right now. So welcome everybody to the Citizen Review Committee Policy and Outreach Work Group. We're continuing our discussions of body-worn cameras. Last month we had the independent agency for the city of New Orleans that hears complaints against the police bureau, as well as reviews their policies and with experience in body-worn cameras. And so we received some information about how the city of New Orleans handles some of the issues that might be facing Portland if and when body-worn cameras are funded and instituted. We invited Captain Eric Oates from the Beaverton Police Department today to speak with respect to how Beaverton has been using body-worn cameras. Beaverton apparently had a pilot project in 2006 bring in the body-worn cameras and have rolled it out to their police force since then. Specifically since they're in the vicinity of Portland, I'm very eager to learn what kind of policy considerations they've had and what they've received as results of the body-worn camera program, both from a community perspective as well as from the police department's perspective. And we'll continue for a few more sessions, kind of learning from other organizations in light of possibly providing policy input and recommendations to the police bureau and the mayor's office as the commissioner of police with respect to what kind of policies might be considered down the road to make sure that the community in Portland has input and concerns that have been discussed in the past, both within the Citizen Review Committee as well as the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing, to make sure that those concerns are addressed. And of course, we'll have broader community input once we have these discussions, some of these points are kind of brought to light and disseminated so that we can have people more focus in on some of the issues that will be decision-making points in the future. So since we only have right now about 11 people here. I think we can take a few minutes to kind of introduce ourselves. Eric, let me leave you to the last and give you time to kind of provide a broader introduction. Greg is a member of CRC. Greg, would you mind starting off with introducing yourself?
Sure. Greg Griffin, CRC team. Glad to be here. Thank you.
All right. Liani, welcome back. Would you like to say a few words?
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm Liani Reyna, retired Portland Police Sergeant.
Kyle Anderson.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Kyle Anderson. I'm a Portland native and an architect here in town. So just curious to hear how this is progressing.
Okay. Mark Porras.
Yeah, hi. My name is Mark Porras. I'm a member of Portland Cop Watch, but I'm just here as a concerned community member.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Grant Cole. And Grant, you're on mute. If you hear this, if you can take yourself off mute and introduce yourself if you so like. Okay, we'll bookmark that for now. We have Portland Cop Watch here as well, Mr. Dan Handelman, I assume. Usually we have a phone and video link. So Mr. Handelman, your link says no microphone. So if you're trying to call in or if you have any ability to say hi, please feel free. Otherwise, we'll save your comments for the open part of the meeting later on today. Okay, great. Stephanie, would you like to introduce yourself? I'm sure everybody here is eager to learn more about you as well.
Yeah, I'm Stephanie Lorenko. I retired as a police captain from the police bureau last year, and I'm now day two as the public safety advisor for the mayor, and basically picking up where Robert King left off, hopefully to do what he was doing and maybe a little bit better.
Thank you. Thank you. Enjoyed working with Robert. Sam, would you like to just briefly introduce yourself?
Hi, Sam Adams. I'm on the Strategic Innovations Group with Stephanie and some other smart folks in the mayor's office. So glad to be here. And really happy that you're digging into this topic now, because we're working on RFPs. Draft RFP on the equipment part of this, only the equipment part of this, and what's out there. So it's perfect timing.
All right. And we have somebody from the law firm of Albies and Stark, and I believe you're representing one of the Amici to the settlement agreement. What would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Ashley Albies, and I'm counsel for Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, and have been interested in this issue for some time. So I'm just here to listen.
All right. Welcome. Welcome. Nice to have you here. And lastly, but not least, Irene, the hardest working person in government here. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Irene Konev. I'm with IPR. I'm the Community Outreach Coordinator, and I'm happy to be here with such an amazing group of people.
Thank you. All right, Eric, Captain Oates, I will give the floor to you to make some introductory remarks. And if you'd like to just generally give us observations about body-worn camera program in the Portland, in the Beaverton Police Department. And then I'll kind of moderate a discussion as soon as you're complete with your portion.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. As Vladim said, my name is Eric Othis. I'm a police captain with the City of Beaverton Police Department. I've been in law enforcement since 1993. We started our program in 2015, not 2006. We looked at 14 different body-worn cameras, did some where they came in and did all their displays. We selected four cameras, did body-worn test wears on each of the different cameras based upon the different things that we wanted to look for, like battery power for lasting the length of your shift, visual, how much of a view you get from the body-worn camera, all that kind of stuff. We decided in late 2016 that we would go with the Axon body-worn camera, and we started our program in February of 2017. So we've had it for just under 5 years. We have 110 cameras purchased. All of our officers that are on patrol wear a body-worn camera. Anybody that goes out that is not typically a patrol officer is also able to check and should check if a body-worn camera out. We did some, obviously we did all the community outreach and everything beforehand. We did surveys with the community. We did surveys with officers. All of both were very supportive of having a body-worn camera program. The feeling was that the cameras bring kind of a insight into what the officers do. It shows how the officer acted at the time. It also talks about and shows the scenes and everything else that you use for criminal investigations. And we are just finishing our first 5-year contract with Axon and look to probably renew it in next spring. And I'll go from there, whatever you guys need.
Okay, so one of the topics of conversations we've had, both in this space as well as some of the other ones, is that the chain of custody. There's a lot of inquiries as to what that would look like, who has ability to view the videos, access the videos, and edit the videos. What kind of arrangement is there with Axon that you have with respect to being able to download, edit, and who has those rights?
So the way the system is set up, the officer is required anytime they have an interaction with somebody where they would typically go out on the radio with our dispatch center. So if I get out to talk to somebody sitting on a bench, I would turn it on. If I go to a call, whether it's self-initiated or dispatch generated, I would turn it on. So almost every interaction with the general public is recorded. We require the officers either during their shift or at the end of their shift to tag each one of them with the incident number. And then also they have to tag it with a time period in which we're going to retain the property, retain the video. The minimum time we retain a video where there's no enforcement action is 7 months. And then we go up to indefinite retention for based on different crimes. The officer, there's nothing the officer can do to the video. It's recorded onto the camera. They put it into a dock and it automatically uploads to Axon's third party control system into their network, basically. Officers have the access to look at video at any time, and we actually encourage officers to look at the video as they're writing reports, because what do we want? We want to have the most accurate reports based upon our conversations with them, based upon the citizens or the community members' comment, whatever it is. We want it to be the most accurate. And like anybody who takes notes, we used to take notes in notebooks, we still do, but that's open to people's interpretation of what is actually was said. With the video, it makes it pretty easy for the officer to go, okay, this is exactly what I said, and this was their exact answer. As far as who has the ability to delete videos, there's two people in our agency that have the ability, and those are the system administrators. And as I know it today, there has been no videos we've ever deleted. There's no reason to delete them. Who has also, besides that, who has access to them with the district attorney's office. We're able to share that electronically with the DA's office for their review of whatever the circumstances were.
Thank you. And then do you also get requests from the public or perhaps other individuals, lawyers and things like that for access to the videos, public records requests or whatever other method you have?
Yes. So if there is somebody that's been arrested, obviously the district attorney's office then shares the video with the defense attorneys. As far as any public records requests, yes, you can. We do receive public records requests, but Oregon law says that there has to be a specific reason and justification for that the release of it. And so we follow the Oregon laws based on that.
And for those requests, and if you don't know the answer to this directly, that's fine as well. But do you know how many resources you need to devote within the police department in order to address, you know, reviewing videos for people making requests or any partnerships you have with the DA's office or otherwise?
So it varies. So the public records requests are handled through one or two different people within the organization. As far as the sharing of videos to the district attorney's office, we have four evidence technicians who part of their job is to share that evidence with the district attorney's office, just like they do any other evidence that's collected for any type of prosecution.
Another concern that's been raised historically, at least, is perhaps officers not turning on their cameras when interactions occur. You've touched upon this a little bit, I believe, with respect to what officers are supposed to do, but have you and historically encountered those situations, and what does the police department do to address those if they happen?
Yeah, so like I said, our policy requires officers to do it, but there's also an exception where it says under exigent circumstances, if they're jumping out of the car and they're chasing somebody, they may not have the wherewithal or the ability to turn the camera on. They're supposed to turn it on as soon as they can. Our officers actually, they all turn them on pretty regularly. There may be we've come across a couple times when there's not been body-worn camera. Within that, we look at our discipline policy, and since it's a policy violation, we address it based upon the circumstances of the crime.
And does that include disciplinary proceedings of some sort?
It could, yeah. It could be anywhere from a first-time offense to a letter in their file saying, hey, remember that you need to turn your body-worn camera on. It's per policy. You do it every day. If it's a situation where it wasn't an exigent circumstance kind of a situation, it could, I suppose, ultimately could end up becoming a terminable offense as well if the officer continues to refuse to, or it appears that the officer continues to appear to refuse to turn it on. But we don't have that situation. Most of our officers want them on as well.
With respect to the use of the body-worn cameras, are they limited to patrol officers? Are there exceptions to, you know, say investigator or detectives or sergeant level or some other individuals that do not wear the body cameras?
Yeah, so we have, so within our organization, we have any patrol officer, our traffic officers, our school resource officers, our patrol sergeants, and our patrol lieutenants typically all have a body-worn camera. I'm not a patrol supervisor, but if I went out on patrol and I put my uniform on and I'm going to jump in a car with somebody, the expectation is that I would check one of the extra body-worn cameras out, because each camera is assigned to an individual officer. But we do have 6 or 7 cameras that are considered pool cameras. It's just more effort for me when I log a video. I have to go and specifically change the video from generic video to my name. But the expectation would be that I would put a body-worn camera on. Detectives do not have them because they're not in uniform. They're not out doing enforcement action. Typically, they're doing follow-up and that type of stuff.
One of the reasons that the Citizen Review Committee kind of initiated this discussion series is that there have been several studies done in the last few years that have kind of shown the totality of the studies. Each one individually has shown this, but the totality have shown that there appears to be a decrease in use of force with respect to interaction with the communities, as well as a decrease in complaints against the police officers themselves that seem to align with the implementation of body-worn cameras. Of course, in Portland, we're very sensitive to community interactions with the police, especially with respect to use of force. And certainly the Citizen Review Committee hears complaints Have you, in longitudinally reviewing this program for the Beaverton Police Department, encountered either one of those scenarios, any reduction that you've seen in your jurisdiction with respect to either use of force in general or complaints against the police bureau?
You know, I am aware of those studies as well. We have not, our use of force and our complaints have pretty much stayed the same throughout the 5 or 6 years that we've had them. The one thing that we do find interesting is sometimes attitudes change when they know they're, when a citizen's known they're being recorded, as well as an officer. We had officers that weren't very excited about wearing body-worn cameras. One of them actually got into a situation where somebody made a complaint against them. We went back and looked, and the officer was totally, you know, doing exactly what they wanted. So we have not seen a decrease in it. Maybe it's because of the size of our agency versus larger agencies. I can't answer why, but ours has pretty much stayed the same.
And are there any sort of review mechanisms that your police department has where a supervisor might sample a portion of the officer's camera footage randomly or otherwise, or, you know, larger than the portion, in order to make, you know, policy recommendations or perhaps even, you know, reviewing performance of police officers while on the job, either one of those scenarios?
Yeah, we have within our policy, so do a little backup here, explain. So if I, as an officer, am involved in a use of force situation, whether it's an arm bar where I have to take somebody and put their arm behind their back because they're resisting arrest or something like that, or I have to take them physically to the ground, or I use a taser or any of that type of stuff, we have to fill out what's called a use of force form. And so each one of those use of force forms is reviewed by the supervisor, the direct supervisor, then it's reviewed by the lieutenant, and then it's reviewed by the senior command within the agency. So each one of those, so when the officer uses the use of force and fills out the form, their direct supervisor goes back and reviews each one of the videos for the officers that are all involved in the use of force. Besides that, anytime we get a complaint, a personnel complaint, we go back and we're able to look at the video and we're able to see exactly what happens. From the officer's perspective with their body-worn camera, which picks up audio from everybody involved. And then, yes, the supervisors do have the ability to look at various camera incidents that officers have put in throughout their work time, just to make sure they're adhering to policy and everything else. So there's multiple ways in which we actually review and monitor the video.
Next, I kind of want to shift over to the economics of having body-worn cameras. In the past, that was a hurdle for Portland, at least. There was an argument that the cameras would cost X number of millions of dollars to implement and might not be the best use of resources. And again, some of the studies seem to show that there's an offset based on the money that could be saved in litigation costs or otherwise and use of resources. But from your own perspective, have you dealt with those issues in the Beaverton Police Department with respect to costs and any cost savings that you might have seen?
We have. To give you a little perspective, so obviously we're much smaller than the Portland Police Bureau. Our cost for our 5-year cost for the camera project was just over $322,000. Part of it was paid for by a grant from the Department of Justice. There's a bunch of different grants out there you can get, and the remaining factors or parts of it were through the city budget. It's going to be more coming up when we renew it because of storage fees and that kind of stuff. So you have to pay for the camera and the equipment. Then, at least with Axon, then you also have to pay for a license that allows each officer to operate the camera and go in and put in all the data that they need to, the incident numbers, all that type of stuff. So there's a lot of costs that are associated with it, but we'll probably end up spending for the next 5-year contract at least the same amount, if not maybe closer to $400,000. It is a pretty good expense, but I think it's well worth the expense, because one of the biggest things that people are asking for is police accountability. And how much better can I get police accountability than having a body-worn camera on, and every time I interact with the community, it's recorded. There's no way to really argue that what I did or didn't do when it's recorded. So for that, I understand that, you know, yes, there are things that all police departments can do better. And if this is one of the things, by me having to wear a body-worn camera to be able to show that, look, we're being transparent, we're trying to be as good as a police department as we can, I think that's well worth the $300,000 over 5 years.
And this kind of piggybacks on what you just said, but over the past 5 years, what sort of input have you received from community members and police officers themselves, and also perhaps some of your partners like the DA's office or any other partners you might be working with respect to the use of these cameras, specifically, you know, community input, but also internally, what have you been hearing?
Yeah, so when we first started the project back in 2016, I have some of the numbers. We did obviously a poll of our staff, and you know, we asked should we implement a body-worn camera program, and just our officers, 85% of our officers, when we did it, we started the project in January, 85% said yes, and then in October, 78% said no. So that was back in 2016, and I would say today that if you were to ask an officer to go out on the road and we're going to tell them you're not going to wear a body-worn camera, they wouldn't be real happy about it. They love wearing the cameras, because what it does is it actually documents exactly what happened. If I act poorly as a police officer, it documents that. If I act professionally as a police officer, it documents that. And what it does is it gives me the security to know that when I do the right things and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm doing what I'm trained, I'm doing within policy, within law, that I can show, look, this is what I did. And so most of our officers are very, very happy to be wearing them. Back in 2016, we asked our community members, we had 1,100 respondents, and 73% of them said yes, they think that we should be wearing body-worn cameras. Do they think that it increases transparency between police and the residents? 78% of the people said yes. You know, we asked, does the body-worn camera increase trust between police and residents? And the answer was 61% said yes. And as far as anything with the community since then, we've not done another survey of community members, but in general, from what I hear, is most community members are very supportive of us wanting or having us wear and continue to wear the body-worn cameras.
And for everybody in the room, I'm going to finish my questions here. These are issues that I wanted to address because they've been raised in the past quite a few times. And I'm going to open it up to community questions as well. So I hope there are some people here that would like to speak with Captain Oates and ask questions, and you will have that opportunity. So I'm not trying to hog the time here, but I just have maybe about 2-3 more questions really quickly. One of those questions is with respect to privacy concerns. So sometimes there are individuals, and in these discussions we've cited, and or people have raised instances where there might be an individual that was perhaps nude, or a minor, or someone in a mental health crisis, or otherwise, where perhaps having a camera would not be in the interest of that individual if there's not a crime being committed, or if it hasn't risen to the level of a crime, or there's a whole plethora or spectrum of issues here. But how do you all deal with those sort of issues, with the privacy concerns versus the institutional concerns?
Yeah, some of that's covered by ORS. process of Oregon revised statutes. There's some of that is that talks about body-worn cameras and what we can and can't do. We definitely had a lot of discussion on privacy. We don't use the body-worn cameras for interviews with like child abuse. If officers go to a child abuse case, they typically do not do the body-worn camera. I say typically because we don't audit them to make sure that they're not doing it, but that's what's in our policy. If there's a sexual assault victim, we don't record that kind of stuff. If we're at a hospital and there's medical stuff going on, we don't record that. We don't want to record any other private information like that. Other than that, we do pretty much record everything else, domestic violence, robbery information, all that kind of stuff. We do have a partner policy that does allow the officer to turn it off if it's requested by the community member and they feel that it's okay and justifiable to turn it off. We just ask them to make that notification, because obviously if I'm talking to you, sir, and you say, hey, can you turn the camera off? I don't feel comfortable talking on camera. Then it's already recorded. And then I just say, okay, so you don't want me to record what we're going to talk about right now. And so we kind of clarify that. So it's very clear that I'm turning the camera off based on your wishes. So yes, there is a variety of different things. If you guys don't have a copy of our policy, I can make sure you guys get a copy of it that kind of outlines all the different things where we would be able to turn the camera off.
Okay. I did put, for those in the meeting here in the chat, the link to the body-worn camera policy for Beaverton Police. And it did go out in the email as well for people that may not have been able to attend this meeting, but maybe subsequent ones. Let me just run through some of these additional concerns. All right, let me open you up for questions to everybody else that's attending this hearing, both the community members as well as CRC and any city officials that might be here. Feel free to raise your hand or at this point in time, also directly ask the questions if no one else is speaking. Is there anybody that has any questions right now?
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead, Ashley.
Thank you for your presentation. Have you ever used body cam footage as a basis for discipline or corrective action against any officers?
Yeah, I was just talking with the detective lieutenant about this earlier, and it actually makes it a lot easier because it's already documented. If I, as the officer, use inappropriate language or whatever I end up doing, and somebody makes a complaint about it, we no longer have the question, why did you do this or did you do this? It's not, did you do this? It's, why did you do this? Because it's right there on video. So yes, we have used the video from the known officers to give them discipline.
And any use of force in particular, or more conduct and language and courtesy type of complaints?
Both. We had a use of force the other, probably earlier this spring, that one of our lieutenants didn't feel was quite appropriate. It got reviewed and they said, yeah, you didn't use the appropriate force. So they disciplined and gave him a little bit of extra training, that kind of stuff.
So the remedy for the discipline was extra training, but I guess that's an issue covered by collective bargaining. But I think the corrective action taken in response to use of force sustained findings is pretty important to make sure that it remedies the deficiencies in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. Mark, your hand is next.
Yeah, thanks. I have a couple questions. One is just the results of the citizen surveys. That was interesting to hear the numbers. I was just wondering if those are available online somewhere.
I don't think since it was in 2016, it's not, but I can give you I could probably provide to you, see if I should have the actual results from the, numbers that are, because all these, so the, yeah, I mean, I can provide, I got a sheet right here. Let's see if I can get out of here. The community-wide, sorry, I'm trying to break my thing. The community-wide surveys are directed through our mayor's office. So they're the ones that put them out and promote them. And I can provide this document right here that covers the answers and the four questions that we asked. I can provide that.
Oh yeah, I think, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. That'd be awesome. I have one other question is, I know that most, you know, most of the officers are on board with wearing a body camera and, but there are, it sounded like there are some that maybe were not on board. And I was just wondering if you're able to give like some examples of what an officer's reason would be for why they would not want to wear a body worn camera.
Well, and that was, yeah. So early on in the process, we did have a number of officers who didn't like the idea. They felt it was like an invasion of their own privacy. I don't really have a good answer other than that's what I was hearing is, well, I don't want to be recorded every day. How would you like to be recorded every day? You know, if you're sitting in the car and you know, whatever you're doing, it can record. If you forget to turn it off, that type of stuff. We weren't really fazed by that. We thought, well, okay, then get used to being recorded because that's what we feel is necessary to help open up and be more transparent with our community members. One of the officers I do remember in particular, he was against it, but he ended up wearing it out there. He went out and had a contact with a community member. The community member was not friendly towards him at all and said that he was going to complain to his sergeant. The officer said, okay, go ahead. The officer calls his sergeant because that's what we do. We tell our officers, hey, if you're going to receive a complaint, I'd rather hear it from you first rather than the citizen. And he said, hey, you're going to get a complaint. The guy told me he was going to complain against me. And he said, okay. The guy calls in or the gentleman calls in. They end up talking to him. He says, okay, let me review the body-worn camera footage. And as soon as the community member heard that the conversation was recorded, he said, oh, never mind. The officer went back, or the sergeant went back with the officer, reviewed the video. The officer was more than appropriate in his conversation and everything else. And since that day, that officer went, you know, I'm wearing this body-worn camera because it just saved me a complaint. So it goes both ways. It captures the incident and how it actually happens, whether the citizen's acting appropriately or not, and whether the officer is. So I think that over time, I think there's been a number of instances like that where it would have come out as an investigation, or in an investigation, it would have been a kind of a he said, she said, we can't really figure out exactly what happened. Whereas now they have video footage of what exactly happened. So they're able to either deal with it in a disciplined manner if it was inappropriate, or they're able to clear the officer of any wrongdoing.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
And Mark, I put my email in the chat. Also, if you want me to email you directly with the information you requested, either email me or put your email in the chat, and either way, I'll reach out to you. And Eric, if you could email me that study, and then I'll pass it along to anybody, and also probably use it in our report as well. I think it'll be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Liani, I see your hand is raised as well.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Captain, if I understood you correctly, did you tell us that the officers review their body camera footage before they write the report?
Yes.
And is that for every single report, like whether it's a use of force or a stolen car report or a theft report?
Yeah, initially we didn't think that would happen. But I think over time officers have realized that we obviously want to write the most efficient and truthful reports as we can. And I know if in your police career, I'm sure that, you know, you use notebooks, and notebooks, you can write down kind of the highlight conversations, but it doesn't, you sometimes miss some things. things. And so I think officers have realized that, you know what, I still take notes, I still have my notebook, but when I write my report, because I want it to be as detailed as possible, as truth as possible, they do review them and write the reports with that as that assistance.
Okay, well, that's helpful, because from what I'm hearing and what I've read, the Portland Police Association has been resistant to the body camera program unless the city agrees to allow officers to review the footage before writing a report or perhaps being interviewed by internal affairs or detectives on a criminal investigation, like an officer involved shooting. And so your question really covers the benefit of that. So thank you for it. What came up last month was the presenter said that supervisors were reviewing all the body camera footage at the end of the shift to verify the report, corroborate what the officer was writing is consistent with what is on the body camera video. Are your supervisors doing that as well?
No, they're not.
Okay. I thought it might be time consuming if a supervisor was sitting at the end of the night. I had a shift of 65 officers. So even though we parceled out the duties, you can imagine if I'm reading 40 reports a night, I would never go home at the end of the night. So that's right. The question. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and there's these policy considerations, some of which are going to be collective bargaining as well, but you raise a really good point, Leonie. There's, you know, certainly differences from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and pros and cons. We're hearing a lot that officers should not be reviewing the videos prior to making their report because they want that contemporaneous report rather than being able to review. Other people, you know, including Captain Oates, feel the benefit of being able to review those videos to be able to get the most, you know, the word that was used was honest, but perhaps the most relevant information possible. And I think in New Orleans, they were able to give some sort of statements right after an incident occurred. And then they were able to like modify that statement after having reviewed the footage. So there's these permutations that, you know, for respect to oversight, are really interesting to look into. I don't know who's right or who's wrong or which is better or worse, but I guess that's why, you know, in part we're here. Do you have any feelings about that, Leonie? Just a minute.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so I hear you guys talking and you're kind of going in two directions. So let me clarify just a little bit. Every day, report writing for officers, they go out, it's a theft from vehicle, it's a stolen car, it's a all that type of stuff, they can review their body worn camera as they write the reports. If you're talking about a critical incident, an officer involved shooting or a use of force, serious use of force like that, in that situation, the body worn cameras are taken on instantly or right after, as soon as the supervisor gets there. They're given to our major crimes team in Washington County, and the supervisor for the Washington County major crimes team holds onto the body worn camera. The officers are given an opportunity to review the video prior to their first interview, but they're only given it, they're given 30 minutes right before the interview to review it, and that's it. After that, they don't actually physically write a report in an officer-involved shooting because they're being asked questions by an investigator. So there's a little bit of difference there. I just wanted to make sure at least there was some clarification. And the everyday use of the body worn cameras, yes, they use the footage to write the reports. So they're more detailed in facts and all that kind of stuff.
And Leonie, you've had quite a bit of experience, of course. Had any feelings or thoughts about that in general?
Thank you. Yeah, I was a patrol sergeant for over 17 years during my career. So I reviewed dozens, if not hundreds, of use of force reports. The other question, thank you, I forgot to ask is, you know, it cuts both ways. There's a benefit, there's a con to it if, you know, someone's not being honest. Have you found any inaccuracies, even though the officers are using the body worn camera to write a report? Are you doing any audits if there's an inaccuracy with what the camera captured versus what the officer wrote down? Is anyone running into that? How are you handling it? you know, that would be kind of the police accountability piece that the public is demanding, is we want to make sure officers are being honest, they're being legitimate, they're reporting exactly what they did, they're not doing anything shady. So that's a benefit for the police accountability side. And then for the officer, if they are on the up and up, then it exonerates them from frivolous complaints where the officer is being accused of something they didn't do wrong.
Yeah, we have not run into a situation that has been brought to our attention where an officer writes something differently than what is on the body worn camera. You know, if there's a use of force, the supervisor reviews it and obviously is reading the report to make sure that everything matches up. If there's a complaint, we're doing that as well. We also have, we share all of our body worn camera evidence with our DA's office. So you have a DA or a clerk or somebody else who's reviewing the body worn camera footage to match up with the police report as well. So we've not run into that situation where the officers are intentionally writing something different than is on the body worn camera video. And one thing I don't know if I mentioned, there is no way for the officer to edit the video. Once it's been taken and is in the camera, there's nothing they can do about editing that. So they can't edit it to make it fit along with the lines that they're trying to write in the report.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm. All right, and Grant, I see your hand is up as well. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. I have a question that's basically a follow-up on that last one, where you're describing not having seen situations where there is a report that's written that contradicts what is shown on a body camera. I'm wondering if any part of your policy involves communication with the defense bar, specifically public defenders, criminal defense attorneys, and getting to any looking at outcomes maybe after a trial or after a case is resolved. I'm a public defender in the major felony unit at Metro Public Defender in downtown Portland. So we see some body camera evidence, but it's typically from Gresham. And I'm wondering, because we are typically the ones that wind up reviewing all of that material, and there are examples where we find something that's exculpatory in a body worn camera, is there any part of your review that could include feedback from that might not result in a civil case, that might not result in any sort of use of force, but might result in an acquittal or a dismissal that was otherwise charged?
I'd have to review our policy. I don't believe there's anything in our policy that dictates that. Obviously, I can speak for myself and the organization that if you as a defense attorney were to find something like that in a body-worn camera video, it's different than the police report, and it is able to clear somebody of being charged falsely, I would hope that you guys would reach out to us or through the DA or something so that that's taken care of and addressed. So there's nothing in our policy, but yes, I would welcome anybody to do that. If we've made a mistake like that, or an officer intentionally did something like that, one, we want to address, if it's a mistake, we want to address that. But two, if the officer intentionally did it, I don't necessarily want that officer working for us.
That's a good question, Grant. You know, Grant, I've been privy to some conversations with the DA's office as to, you know, some of the workload that this would entail and some of the costs and things like that. I have not had an opportunity to speak to any public defenders. If you would perchance like to maybe have a quick chat about some of the things that, you know, you might be interested in, and have a conversation, about this in the process. Would you mind emailing me? I'll leave it up to you, but my email is in the chat there, and I'll reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could sort of briefly respond to what Captain Oates had to say, to me, I mean, in my experience, when I've like cross-examined police officers on the stand, it's in my experience, it's not necessarily something that is outright intentional, but, you know, we all, I mean, mostly it's, in my experience, it's either some form of implicit bias or some form of confirmation bias, which leads officers to write things that are directly contradicted when they, you know, when maybe someone else is reviewing the video where the police officer was not present. In my experience, I don't think that a lot of that type of evidence necessarily gets back to anyone in charge of law enforcement and gets integrated into any sort of training or instructions on, you know, how to investigate cases, how to write reports, and what kind of charges are ultimately recommended to the DA's office.
Yeah, I can understand that. And like I said, I think I'd be open, we as an organization would be open to any of that feedback on any of our officers in the cases. Because as we know, as we've all heard throughout the last year or so, everybody has biases. And if there's something we can do, we all try to do bias training. You know, the city here is doing all kinds of stuff to make sure that there is no bias, there's no discrimination, that type of stuff. So if there would be information that, you know, any defense attorney or even a prosecuting attorney had where something like that came up, yeah, I would definitely be open to it and I'd want to hear it.
And I'll be happy to email you, Vinny.
All right, thank you. Okay. Eric, I believe in the conversations with the New Orleans Police Department, they noted that the body camera is actually always on. So whenever, or always recording, I should say. So when the officers turn it on, it actually captures something like 30 seconds preceding when they turn it on. So you actually get to, you know, in the heat of the moment, kind of go backwards in time a little bit to see what happened. Is that something that occurs with your provider as well?
Yeah, so our policy is that if the body-worn camera is on a person, it should be on. Now that's different than recording, but yes, when they, ours happen to be Axon, it has a big circle in the middle of it, and you have to push that and hold it in and you hear a beep. It does record, it buffers 30 seconds before. So it backs up 30 seconds before I actually started. Maybe I turned it on, it backs up the 30 seconds prior to that. So yes, it is doing that.
Okay. I'd like to quickly read a comment from Jared Hager with the US Department of Justice. We see a lot of value to body-worn cameras, not just to show what happened, but also to evaluate why the officers did what they did. For that reason, we prefer an approach that requires an officer to write a force report before viewing the footage in all force cases. That approach best captures the why without tainting perception after the fact, which is especially important in force cases, and citing to Graham v. Connor, 490 U.S. 386. Jared Hager is also part of the litigation that the city has with the Justice Department, that information is valuable. Next kind of question, and if anybody else has any questions, please do raise your hand. But in the meantime, one of the things that I found very interesting about our last conversation with the New Orleans Police Bureau is a reference that was made that in reviewing some of these videos, particularly with people in experiencing mental health crises, they were able to determine that perhaps certain interactions with the police department was not the best use of officer time and could be perhaps used in others. Apparently they were spending a lot of time on certain kinds of incidences that may not have merited armed police responses. As you know, our police force here is understaffed, according to the police bureau here. And we're also trying to implement other alternative programs, such as Portland Street Response, to deal with people with mental health crises on the streets and perhaps also some other permutations of that. So for me, that was a pretty important point that they were able to identify perhaps some of their work that was maybe better handled by other entities. Would you have any input on that, any experience or otherwise with respect to reviewing it in order to ascertain the best use of resources?
We have not used the body worn cameras to that extent. I would agree that there are many things that can be done better by other organizations than law enforcement. Mental health is one of them. You know, we've never went into this profession to be a mental health crisis counselor. And I know one of the things that we've done in Washington County is we have a mental health response team where a police officer is partnered with a clinician and they go out and they do the follow-up, or if there's a mental health call that is better handled by a mental health clinician, then they'll go take care of that. So mental health is one of the things that we've worked on, but we have not used the body-worn camera platform to look for those types of efficiencies.
Also, one more point that was brought up that was of particular interest was in use of deadly force incidents, the New Orleans Police Department released the video footage within a few days of the incident so that the public would better be able to understand what occurred without needing any kind of open records requests or otherwise. Is there any kind of caveats with respect to Beaverton as to what kind of footage you might release automatically because of the type of incident involved?
Yeah, so in a deadly force use situation, the Beaverton Police Department will not release the video because it's not our video to release. It's actually once we turn it over, it goes to the major crimes team for Washington County, and that group is run by the district attorney's office. So like in many of the situations, we will release a press release, let's say, but that's been driven by the district attorney's office. They've approved and said, yep, this is what you can release. It's a similar thing with body worn camera. We would have to get the approval through the Washington County district attorney's office to say, yes, go ahead and release this video. And, you know, I don't have a problem releasing it. It's just, it's not ours. At that point, it's not our footage to release because it's the investigations being done through the district attorney's office.
All right. Thank you very much, Captain Oates. We're running toward the end of our meeting here. I have 1 minute left. Want to just open it up to any thoughts or comments of anybody in the room before we conclude the meeting. Any takers? All right. Great. Captain Oates, I very much appreciate your time. I know you're a busy person, so thank you for this. It's a learning experience for us, and it'll be very helpful in the future. I'll certainly keep you apprised of any follow-ups that might occur from this meeting if anybody contacts me. And then also, I'll get back to you once we actually have enough interviews to start writing a report about our findings. And, perhaps you can come back and speak with the larger CRC membership at some point in time when we're discussing the any kind of report that might emanate from this. Thanks again for your time. I really do appreciate it. Everybody else, I appreciate you coming here. We're going to be doing this on and off for the next few months. Invite some other speakers. Please do come back. If you're not on the email list yet directly, you have my email address. Please contact me and I'll make sure that you get notice of any future meetings as well. Very hot topic here in Portland, and we'll continue those conversations on everyone's behalf. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll conclude the meeting at this point. Take care. Thanks, Irene, for your help.
You're welcome.